hoping that you understand. You ain't the man to tell you in demand. Just pray to God we keep you in the plan. You ain't the man to tell you in it.
Hey there, welcome to Time Out with Ty, episode 63. We're doing something a little differently this time around. We're going to try to have two guests on the same episode, but not at the same time. So first up is my guy, NBA writer all over the place, credentialed NBA writer, I should say, Shane Young. How's it going?
Oh, man, that's way too generous of you, Todd, but how are you doing, man? I got one question for you.
I'm good. What's the question?
Have you voted today?
I haven't yet. Usually I have scheduled tweets for Giannis and Jabari, but lately I've been doing different ones to try to get more retweets. Like I got Jabari about 100 votes yesterday, so I was happy with that. But I will vote soon.
Dude, if Giannis doesn't get in, I'm going to quit my career path as NBA writer, and I'm going to do something else because it would be sacrilege if he doesn't get in.
I completely agree. He's been – I mean, according to – do you follow NBA math?
Yeah, dude, Adam Fromel is awesome. He's like the best player.
Well, they have Giannis up there as one of the best five this season. So he should definitely start that Eastern Conference All-Star game. But let's talk about another forward in the Eastern Conference who's around 6'10". A less happy one. Paul George, you had one of the better quotes I've seen thus far from any player in the NBA when you talked to PG-13, which is such a weird nickname still. But basically, the essence of it was Paul George is not happy. He's having the most efficient season of his career. Well, since his rookie year, but he's taking triple the shots now. So considering volume, the most efficient season of his career, his bulk stats are down a little bit. But more importantly for Paul George, the Pacers are not winning. They're 16-17, which is not the start this team envisioned for themselves. So first off, if you just want to talk a little bit about like talking to Paul George, like what was that like? How is Paul George? And why do you think he's unhappy besides just losing?
Oh, man, it's great you bring that up because Paul is one of the most – I hate when people say like – when people overuse the term, oh, he's one of the most interesting players in the NBA. That's obviously overused. But he truly is. When you talk to him, it's a weird dynamic because at the same time, while he is a good personable – player to sit there and just talk and just chat with, he will answer any question. He won't shut you down like Boogie, won't try to embarrass you like Russ, but he's also not, you know, on the same level as LeBron to where he's going to give you fully in-depth answers like LeBron kind of will sometimes, or you know, Jared Dudley. Jared Dudley is probably one of the best with the media in the league, but
for sure.
PG, he's good, but at the same time, if he's depressed, man, it really comes out in his quotes and everything. Like, he doesn't understand. I think it's like the John Wall dilemma too. He doesn't understand that what he says is going to get blown up. Because whenever John Wall came out in the I guess it was the preseason and said that about Bradley Beal,
He said they sometimes they get mad at each other on the floor.
Yeah,
and that blew up.
Yeah, he doesn't understand that the small little details of what he says is going to be picked apart by fans. And I just put it on Twitter because, you know, that's what I'm supposed to do. And he gave us some interesting stuff. He said that he's probably missing how the team used to be and how it used to feel around there during the 2013 and 14 Eastern Conference Finals days. And, of course, they had leaders such as David West. George Hill was somewhat of a leader. Roy Hibbert was just a good defensive anchor. They don't have that yet in Miles Turner, although he's really, really, really good. He's just not obviously at the same caliber yet. And then Lane Stephenson was a fool, but at the same time, he was something that could help PG on the offensive end. So I think Paul just said he misses the mood, how it used to be around there, how the atmosphere, the camaraderie that they had in 2014. And I think a lot of that's Frank Vogel. How do you feel about that? Do you think since Vogel's gone, it's kind of different?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's sort of a combination of all of those guys being gone. I mean, Vogel, certainly I think PG probably misses the style a lot. I mean, they were a gritty defensive team back then. Yeah. And they're a better defensive team than they are offensive team right now, but they're not really good at either thing.
No.
But really, I would say, though, just to real quick add something else, I think he is sort of getting used to really having the entire team on his shoulders. Because, like, back then, I mean, Vogel was a big figure. You know, you had Roy Hibbert, who's both literally big, and he was a cornerstone of that team. Lance Stephenson. Now it's like Paul George and company. It doesn't feel so much as like Paul George and, you know, these other guys right up there with him, even though obviously Paul George is always the best on that team. There was sort of like that trio of players. Now it's like Paul George, you have to carry this weird team with Monta Ellis and Miles Turner and Big Al off the bench. And it's the fit isn't great and the coach isn't as good. They're not as good on defense or offense. And I just feel like he's really coming to grips with that reality Boogie's faced for so long of like, all right, you got to go win games now. This is a team built for you to carry it. And he's sort of like, this is heavy. That's what he's figuring out. It's heavy to do that in the NBA.
Dude, the Boogie thing, though, that's to an extreme because Boogie's faced some shit. Like, he has gone through complete rubbish. And I would say, like, it's kind of like what Melo has been through before Kristaps got there. Like, as Melo just had JR, Iman, and company, right? Like, he didn't – it was always him. His usage rate was off the charts. And PG's usage rate needs to be a bit higher than what it is.
Yeah.
I think it's like 26 or something. It needs to be a bit higher because oftentimes they want to run things through Jeff T. That's all right. But run things through Monta Ellis, I'm sorry, no, not anymore. and, you know, Miles Turner's not ready to be just dump the ball down the post yet. I mean, he's more of like a spatial 5-4 guy. And I think that, you know, Jeff Teague has actually played a lot better than what we expected after the first 3 weeks of the season because he was bad.
Yeah, he set it off horribly.
And what are the odds of, like, that trade kind of – I wouldn't say works out for both teams, but also at the same time, I think I would say it because while George Hill is amazing and what he's doing, I think his PER is still over 24 in Utah.
Jeez.
Yeah, so it's worked out for Utah, and it's also at the same time worked out for Indy because Jeff Teague is creating a lot more opportunities for other guys. George Hill just didn't do that, but George Hill was better at everything else than Jeff Teague. So.
Yeah, I mean, and shouts out to the Hawks, too. It worked out for them because, as we now know, they're sort of looking at rebuilding, and they got two promising rookie forwards out of that deal, and Taurean Prince and DeAndre Bembry with the dope hair. Yeah, DeAndre Bembry.
you know what about the Pacers, though? Like, I'm writing about this for B-Ball Breakdown right now, but the funny thing is, they kind of the Minnesota Timberwolves syndrome, but not as bad as a discrepancy of it because, like, in the first half, their offensive rating is not that horrible and their net rating is not that horrible. They play pretty well in the first half, average defense or an average team level. But in the fourth quarter, the offensive rating is 28th. There's only two teams worse in the fourth quarter, and that is just there's no excuse for that other than not getting the ball to PG and letting them work.
Do you think, and I think this has become, I don't know if it's really, it might be a hot takey question. Do you think Paul George can be the best player on a championship team if it's built around him?
That is one of the toughest questions because I think you face the same thing with Gordon Hayward, right? Like, can Gordon Hayward be the best? I say no to that one. I say a pretty hard no to that one. With PG, as long as LeBron is living, the answer is no. Right, like the answer is no. I'm sorry for being that simplistic, but like LeBron James controls everything in that conference, and even if he's gone, you still have the likes of Toronto, which I want to talk about them for a little bit in some way because they're amazing. Boston, Milwaukee's coming. They're one of the top, one of the three teams in the top 10 in both offense and defense. Like,
yeah, somehow
the East is getting better, and if George is your best player, it's going to be tough. But I say it's possible. It's possible.
I think it's more like he doesn't need to be the second banana, but he needs like a co-first banana. Like, I think he needs someone who can go get buckets more because I don't. I think he could do it. He just like, really like hasn't.
Kyle Lowry?
Lowry would be perfect. Like Kyrie Irving. Like one of those guys because like Paul George is great at pretty much everything, but he doesn't have that scorer's mentality to just go out and score over and over and over. He just doesn't do it.
My God, Daryl Morey would rip him a new one because he's taken so many like bad contested.
Oh, so many long twos. I was watching. I looked at the numbers and I watched some film, and you'll just watch him like curl around the screen, pull up at that 18-foot jumper inside the arc. Yeah, it's not. He makes a good amount of them, but it's not an advisable shot, and he takes way too many.
And last year, I think, I don't know the stat, but I think last year he was like over 40% from three for a good portion of the season before he started missing a lot of shots. But he needs to take more threes.
Yeah, he does. His shot release is so silky smooth. He pulls up like he's 6'6" at 6'10", which is always. I mean, he's got that Kevin. He's not obviously Kevin Durant like, but he's got that in the same sort of like a tall guy who can really shoot. Like we right now on the Bucks, John Henson's been experimenting with a shot, and it's not like that.
Yeah, John Henson, one of the most weird players to watch for me, because I mean I really like him coming out of Carolina, and I want him to get more credit than what he gets, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen from anyone outside of Milwaukee. So
no, I mean he's just inconsistent. Like he scored 1 point in their last game, so it's just one of those. But I mean, it's whatever. I don't even want to talk about Bucks centers anymore. Well, that's been a whole thing.
Hey, Miles Plumlee used to play for Indy, dude.
Oh, nah. 12.5 million a year, Shane. He's a victory cigar.
I was going to say about these two teams, the city you live in and where I'm hailing from, like Indy and Milwaukee. It's a good chance like both of them could probably make the playoffs, because I think like Indy, they're on the borderline, and if they can just get somewhat of a competent offense, I think they're going to be in the playoffs. So which one do you think the Milwaukee is obviously just far ahead of Indy right now in terms of what they can do defensively?
I mean, it's been interesting to watch the Bucks, because it's like some of the same things they were doing last year are just working better now. I think some of it is really, I think it comes down to the shooters. Like, they have competent shooters now, even without Dele. I mean, Malcolm Brogdon's been an absolute revelation. He dropped a triple-double the other night. But then you have, like, Mirza Teletovic is out there. Tony Snell has been stroking it pretty well. In the absence of Chris Middleton, he's about all you could possibly ask for. Yeah. Dele, when he's healthy, is shooting. Michael Beasley can make a three here or there. And that's just opened up so much for them. Beasley's been great. I don't know how, but he's been great.
That's what the Pacers don't have anyone that I can say that's like a – besides C.J. Miles, I mean, that no one that's really spacing the floor consistently. And you might get a couple games here and there where the Pacers get over 12 threes a game or something like that. But other than that, I mean, it's always a struggle to hit like 8 or 9 threes for them. And that is – we don't have to say this for the Chicago people. That is the most important thing in the league right now, is you have to be able to space that floor and shoot threes. And not just because it gives you one extra point, but because it lets the point guards get in the lane and actually do something.
Yeah, I mean, Zach Lowe wrote this the other day. It's if you don't shoot threes, it's like you're giving up like 5 points, just like automatically almost, just because you're just losing all those extra points right there.
Yeah.
Do you think the Pacers need a trade to shake things up a little bit?
That is hard. I mean, yes, I think they need something to – they need something off the bench that can be competent, because I mean, what they have right now, Monty Ellis, to me, shouldn't even be on the team. What he does, even in his bench minutes, he's scoring at a good rate, but he's given up a lot more points than what he contributes. I mean, I like to see what he is in terms of that total points added and total points saved, because I bet he's poor all around there. But if you want to trade someone to get someone that can help PG, you don't have a good package, because who in the NBA right now, Ty, would you say wants Monte, Rodney Stuckey, Glenn Robinson III is good and he's starting now, but I don't know if you want to get rid of him yet. Miles Turner's untouchable, PG untouchable. Like they don't have enough players to package. Al Jefferson not good in today's game. I don't know what you're going to give to other teams.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like their best shot would be going after a guy that someone wants to move. Like maybe they can sneak in and get Rudy Gay. I don't know how much Rudy Gay helps you. I guess you'd have to play him as a super sub. You can't really start him, Glenn Robb, and Paul George. But I mean, if they wanted to pay – no, if you wanted to pay Rudy Gay to be like a super sub, like a great sixth man, and he's been making every shot he's taken this year basically, they could probably go get him. I don't know what the package looks like. I haven't looked at the trade machine. But I mean,
I have to see what his contract is, because like if it's an expiring deal, he probably wouldn't come back to be a bench player. Yeah, like
it is an expiring deal. So I don't know. I feel like if Rudy Gay really fit in well as a bench player and they won games, maybe he would stay. I mean, Rudy Gay's been traded once already.
Toronto, Memphis.
Yeah. So this would be the third time. Like I feel like Rudy Gay just wants a home, man. if the Pacers were like, look, Rudy Gay, we won't trade you, but you got to come off the bench, he might do it. Maybe not. Maybe not. NBA players want to start, obviously.
Dude, you know who's been really good with their attitude of not starting? Like Al Jefferson. You would think, old grumpy man, 30-year-old Al, I think he's 30, Al Jefferson, oh, I'm going to start me next to Miles, which I wouldn't do. I mean, a lot of people are lobbying for it for better rebounding, but I don't think they'd watch Al Jefferson play. I mean, I don't think that guys that are that nice and stuff about filling in the roles, you can kind of attribute to it with Greg Monroe. How has he been with Jason Kidd's kind of wacky, no, I'm not going to play you today, I'm going to play you today a lot. Like, how's he been with that?
Well, luckily he lately has been he hasn't caught a DMP in a while, which is good because he's leads the team in when on off. I think he's the best when he's on. The Bucks are the best with him out there. Giannis is third. Jason Terry's inexplicably second, which is I'm not reading that as an endorsement of Jason Terry. Monroe has become accustomed to his bench role, and he's dominated. Honestly, he's been really good there. It's been because he hasn't played like the old Greg Monroe. He hasn't been scoring that much. He hasn't been that dominant force.
Yeah. I think that's someone that Larry Bird would want just because he's old-fashioned and he likes that, type of old man's game. I think that he would like to get Greg Monroe, and it probably help bolster what they have, what they need in the interior, because their interior is not that good. But
go ahead. Sorry.
You wrote a good piece about how he's actually defending well.
Yeah, he is.
So, that's not bad. But at the same time, Milwaukee don't know if they're going to get rid of him, and Indy doesn't have enough to give him. So,
well, I mean, if you the Bucks last year, I feel like would have taken almost anything to get rid of him. The reports are that they still want to trade him, but I haven't read much too recently from great sources. I will say I wrote the piece that I don't know if it was the piece you're talking about, but if they trade him, they would. I don't know if they'd make the playoffs. They would suffer such their bench would be ravaged. He and Malcolm Brogdon have this great relationship somehow already. Monroe, if I don't know, I don't think anyone watched Bucks Bulls on New Year's Eve, but
I didn't.
I don't blame you. You can go out and have fun on New Year's Eve and not watch two sub 500 teams play. But Brogdon was one assist away with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And Greg Monroe just did three separate pick and rolls until he had a good shot to take so he could get him the assist. And he made a layup and he got it.
At the end of the shot clock?
He had a couple seconds left. But he just you could tell that's all they wanted to do. That's the only reason they were out there, was to get him the triple double. And it was a great moment afterward. They gave him an ice bath in the locker room and everything. But Monroe's been super positive this year. He's been excited. He's had a great attitude about, I'll do what I have to do to help this team win. And he's been way less grumpy. The important thing is he's slimmed down. He has people always laugh at me for this. He looks a lot like a somewhat smaller Dwight Howard. Whereas he used to have Monroe used to be a little chunkier. Now he's got that Dwight Howard, it's all shoulders and then he's pretty slim body going on. And he's been way better. He gets a lot of steals because he can't jump. He's not much of a jumper. So instead of trying to block shots, he just pokes the ball out on the way up. So you can't even get above him, and it's been working really well. He's got real active hands.
Yeah.
I really hope they don't trade him, because I think they would suck if they traded him.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think they'd make it either. But both you and I have this weird connection of living – or not. I mean, just covering teams that are in the low market or the small markets with Indy and Milwaukee. I mean, not everyone's paying attention to these teams. But and then you have Giannis and PG, who are the same position, essentially, carrying them. Jabari, I wish Paul George had Jabari Parker. That's what I'm saying. Giannis does have that key right there with Jabari that is actually playing better than Wiggins. Don't tell anybody.
I really got some flack for saying he's playing better than Carmelo before. So definitely don't tell anybody that.
God, dude, Tommy. Oh man, I ain't gonna say it.
Let's just move on.
So I really think that you're on the money. They need to get something. To help him, or that option next year, next summer is going to be really, I think it's not this summer coming up, but the next summer, Paul George's option that he can opt out. It's going to be really interesting, because I would not want to come back if I was him, but that new CBA with the $70 million more he can get.
Yeah. That's going to be the difference maker, right? I mean, it's ridiculous how much more he can get now.
And I know that you're not in position to answer this because you're not a millionaire or anything, but like, would that matter for you? I mean, would that $70 million overtake, because that's $70 million, would that overtake the living in a good environment that's warm and enjoying it? And, you know, because he doesn't really have – he has a daughter, but he doesn't really have like a family base like Chris Paul does or someone like that would not want to move from L.A. because of schools and that kind of stuff. Would that $70 million overtake just being on a contending team?
I think it would. I think part of it, the other reason would be he's so familiar there and it can be hard to leave, especially when you've been there for so long. The hope is that the Pacers will become a contending team.
Yeah.
I don't know what the roadmap to that is exactly. I mean, they're not going to have great picks. He's too good for that. They don't have assets to flip into a second star, so they kind of have to get lucky or lure someone else there. The other question is, like, where would he go? You know, what team would Paul George – I mean, obviously you could fit him almost anywhere. But, like, what team would he fit in on really well that has the cap space to add him? Like, obviously the Clippers. Yeah. Paul George would be fantastic, but they can't sign anyone, much less Paul George.
There is a way he can get to a contender, and that's not even that much of a contender. Because once Blake – like, say they lost Blake Griffin. Say Blake Griffin went somewhere else, which I don't think he's going to. But if he did – you can use that area of space to get a Paul George, and that means Chris Paul would have to come back if you want a contending team.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what if CP then leaves too? So it's the Clippers are in a tough spot going forward. Like, it's if they continue to suck, and obviously they've lost the two best players for most of this run, where they're
the seventh seed right now.
Yeah, they are
seventh seed.
So if they don't finish as if they get bumped, like if they're the seventh seed, rather facing like the Spurs in round one.
That's again.
And that's not a real winnable series. I mean, they could win, but it's not obviously a guarantee. If they get bumped in the first round, that's going to get ugly. I don't think they'll stay in the seventh seed.
Yeah. And sticking with Paul George, the Lakers are – he grew up a Laker guy, and he's from Fresno, not that far away. But why go to a team that's not even going to win 30 games? Like why? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean – the other thing I was going to ask you is, like, is there any chance – I don't think there is. Is there any chance that they try to trade Paul George? I don't see it. Like, why? What do you get that's worth Paul George?
You don't get anything. Like, my favorite phrase that Zach Lowe's ever used is – I know you've probably listened to these podcasts. He says, you're lighting wins on fire.
You absolutely are.
But there's no better time to trade him, right? Because, I mean, he's – what's he, 27, 26? 25?
Something like that.
Yeah, you're like 25, 26, and there's like no better time, and his deal is expiring after next year. You could get a lot of haul for Paul George. You could get a lot for him, but you're not going to be in the top 8 to 7 in the East for the next 3 years if you do it. So it's like,
yeah, at least that. I mean, they don't. If you trade Paul George, I mean, you're probably getting back a couple young players. If you trade him to the Lakers, yeah, you could get like Russell, maybe like Ingram. But I mean, you're looking at like young role players and draft picks, and that means if you're real lucky in 4 years, you might be good again.
For the last few minutes here, we should really talk about, because that ties in what you said. That ties into what we were talking about the DMs last night, in that group chat we have, the Hopeless Romantics. We were talking about, like, there's not enough to be said about just being good. For your fans, for your city, for the money it brings in, for everything. Keeping a job as a head coach, as a GM, because Chip Kelly just got fired. I mean, that's not a good comparison, but I mean, if you're not good, you will be out.
Yeah.
In Atlanta has been good in playoffs. They have the longest playoff streak other than the San Antonio Spurs in the NBA. So, I mean, like, there's just not enough to be said about actually being a 40-plus win team, but at the same time, your superstar will not like it.
So. Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting, like, since the Sixers tanked, even some hardcore fans, it seems like there's been this weird dichotomy where either you're contending or you got to blow it up, and that's just not true. Like, if the Raptors never win a title with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan.
If I'm Kyle Lowry, I'm happy. I never win a title, I'm still happy. Like,
yeah, I think the fans are too. I mean, they had won like what, a playoff series or something before those two.
Yeah,
and now they're the second best team in the East every year. I mean, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Like, you can't expect to beat one of the three greatest players ever. I don't know where people rank LeBron. He's got to be up there.
Yeah.
If you can't beat him, are you a failure? I don't think so. I mean, I'd rather be them than the Orlando Magic. I'd rather be them than the Sixers or the Nets or these other teams. I mean, the Nets are probably the worst situation in the NBA. But, you know, I'd rather be – I mean, pretty much any team in the East, I'd rather have the Raptors than. I mean, maybe the Bucks, just because Giannis looks so good. Like, who knows how good Giannis will be? And he's so good now. But most other teams, I mean, to be frank, fuck potential. Like, give me the wins. Like, I'm not going to trade Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan and get 10 picks and rebuild. Like, it sort of worked for the Celtics. But now the Celtics are seeing the other end of it, too, where, I mean, they did the right thing. Those guys were older. They didn't trade, you know, 24-year-old stars. They were traded 30-plus-year-old stars. But I mean, even the Celtics are seeing the rougher end of that, in that they don't have their star player. You know, do we pay Isaiah Thomas? Do we not? You know, what's going on here? What's the best move for us down the road? They don't really know. They have the picks. They're in a good situation. But I mean, the Raptors have stars, and it's not enough for them to win the East unless something weird breaks, so they can get Paul Millsap or whatever happens. But you'll take what the Raptors are serving. You'd rather be the Raptors than the Pacers right now.
Oh, I'd rather be the Raptors because I don't want this to happen, God forbid, but say LeBron tears something tomorrow or breaks something in April.
Yeah.
I mean, they will go to the NBA Finals if something happens to LeBron James. And
even if he gets a step slower this year, next year, it's got to happen eventually.
I will take that chance. And I guess the other part, what people will come screaming to you about is the LA Clippers. They've been in that position for years now. They've been in that second, they cannot get over the hump. And they've been good every year, 56 plus wins every year. The thing is, though, like the criticism you take, Chris Paul. Now, every time you hear Chris Paul's name, it's can't get out of the second round, not good enough to win the championship. You have to live with that criticism if you're going to be a middle of the road team. And if you can't live with it, then might as well blow it up. Because I mean, like, Chris Paul will never be viewed. I view him as the second best point guard ever, but he'll never be viewed nationally as close to like Magic, or even if Curry wins a few more championships, Curry will elevate over him. So that criticism is going to come.
Yeah, but I mean, it's part of it depends on expectations. I mean, the Clippers, for whatever reason, have much higher expectations than the Raptors do. Maybe it's just because of the star names there. I mean, even if you look at how good the Raptors are, maybe they should be that high, but they don't have the third star. But I mean, part of it too is franchise history. Like, Celtics fans and Lakers fans want a ring within 3 years. Raptors fans are like, hey, we're not the worst team anymore. Stars want to play here now. I mean, that's huge for them. For the Bucks, signing Greg Monroe was huge. It was like, oh my God, someone signed here. This is crazy.
Could you believe that Kyle Lowry, if I told you Kyle Lowry is already one of the three best Raptors ever, like, that is insane.
Oh, him
like,
and DeMar is too.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I would put Lowry over DeMar just for
– Yeah, I would too. Yeah.
But like Vince Carter and Chris Bosh, then it's like nothing.
That's it. Yeah, it's those four and then pretty much nothing. But hey, good for them. They got two of them right now.
I know.
We should wrap up. Let's do some plugs real quick. I know we can find you at all sorts of places. Tell the people where they can get more Shane in their lives.
More Young NBA. You can find me at Young NBA on Twitter. And you could also go to B-Ball Breakdown. If you follow me at Young NBA, you can go to B-Ball Breakdown. And today's Fast Break, which is actually now FanRag NBA. I write there occasionally. And 16 Wins a Ring is our new site that we're jump-starting. Just got some follows from Steve Nash and Brent Berry to plug a few happy things. So we're on the rise, and hopefully one day Ty might join.
We'll see. We'll see. You can find me at Ty Windisch on Twitter. Check out the podcast at timeoutwithty.com. Also, my words are found at hoopshabit.com and behindthebuckpass.com. Check out joeyburbs.com. He does the intro and outro music to this podcast. He's got new music coming within a week, and it's really good. Like, I've heard it. It's fantastic.
If you ain't the man, or you ain't the man until you're in demand. So
yeah, you ain't the man until you're in demand. There you go. Nice plug. Shane, thank you so much for coming on and talking PG-13 with me. I definitely appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, man. Thanks. You ain't the man to tell you in demand. Just pray to God we keep you in the plan.
You ain't the man to tell you in it. Hey there, welcome to Time Out with Ty, episode 63, part 2. Part 1, we talked about Paul George and the disappointing Pacers. Here in part 2, we're going to talk about Paul Millsap and the intriguing Atlanta Hawks, who are apparently looking to move him. To help me do that, I've brought on Behind the Buck Pass co-expert and Hawks savant, Adam McGee. How's it going, Adam?
I'm back, Ty.
You cemented your lead.
I don't think anyone's caught me yet, but I'm just going to consolidate it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you might as well, right? I mean, there's no shame in front running or running up the score when it comes to podcasts. All's fair in love and pods.
LeBron. I take some rest, and then every now and then I'll just come out and send a reminder to everyone of who's really the best in this game.
Yeah, his Miami South Beach vacation is certainly coming up soon as they build a lead over the Raptors in the conference. Speaking of the Raptors, they are one of probably many teams interested in the now available, I believe according to Mark Stein and Brian Windhorst over at ESPN, Paul Millsap, and I guess Korver, and who is the other one?
Tabo Sofolosha.
Oh, and Tabo are also available. So that's three very important players expiring. To the Hawks.
Basically, anyone whose contract is up this summer, the Hawks are, I guess, kind of sensibly saying, okay, we'll listen to offers on.
Yeah, we should be clear from the jump. They're not. I don't think the Hawks feel the need. Maybe they do for Millsap to get something for him. But from the verbiage that was used was, are listening to offers, I believe. So it's not like Atlanta's freaking out at the moment. They are just willing to pick up the phone. Is that the sense you get too?
I trust Mark Stein quite a lot. So when he says that's kind of happening, that I tend to believe that. Now, Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, I guess he's basically the primary Hawks beat writer. He came out last night and wrote a piece that, although rumors have started, Millsap is not on the trading block. I tend to think he is. I've reached a point, this is very different to last year when these sort of rumors emerged about Millsap, Horford, Teague, and it's different because you don't have all three of those guys together, with Schroeder coming up still, Korver a year younger, Bazemore having a career season at that point. It's not really the same thing this year. It's easier to understand why they might go, you know what, we've got a really good run out of this. We have by far the longest streak of consecutive playoff appearances in the Eastern Conference. But if we're not careful, when that comes to an end, it could last for quite a while. We don't have a whole lot of young players. There isn't a ton of assets. There's not an abundance of cap room about to open up that you feel they'd have endless options. They'd have obvious holes to plug. I don't know if they're the oldest, but they're definitely among the two or three oldest rosters in the NBA at the moment. So with the season, even though they've won, it's three in a row now after beating the Spurs last night, and they've suddenly picked up some form again. They're back sort of, I think, in the five spot at the moment, maybe even moved up to the four last night. This isn't the 60-win Hawks. This isn't even probably the 50-win Hawks. So it makes sense. If they want to be something other than mediocre and maybe what they were for the best part of a decade before that 60-win season, the time comes where you've got to be proactive, and I think that time is now.
Should we have sort of seen this coming after the Jeff Teague trade, in which Atlanta, for the first time in, I don't want to say recent memory, but in a little while, has traded away a player for draft picks and actually used the picks, much to my, and I think your surprise too. They didn't just flip those picks for someone else. They got real rookies for them who are playing pretty well.
No, I don't know if we should have seen it coming. And I guess in hindsight, that's less surprising if they felt there was a real chance that Horford wouldn't come back.
Yeah.
That's a case where, okay, you're not just going to flip the picks for some veteran, because I feel like now the Hawks offseason, it's funny to look at. It feels like they had sort of a foot in both camps, one in, well, we may have to press reset here pretty soon, and the other in, well, we could kind of just be good enough and maybe even sneakily better than we thought, kind of like they started this season by making the right moves in the summer. I don't think the Hawks had a bad offseason, but now it's looking I don't know. It's hit and miss. There's a mixture of the good and the bad in there when the direction of the team is now uncertain, as in whether you're going to continue to look at playoffs or you're going to rebuild. And with the Hawks, I think the thing with that is Schroeder's around. He's not going to be going anywhere. Dwight's now there. He's not going to be going anywhere. Even Bazemore, although he struggled, I mean, he's a good, proven NBA player, and he's going to be around. The Hawks could probably still hang around the 8 seed, maybe just outside of that in rebuild times. But they have a chance to do that and maybe pick up some assets without having to go full tank by moving Millsap, moving Korver, moving Cephalosha. And those other two guys are important as well, because as easy it is to talk about what you could get for Millsap, Korver's a guy who for years, like the Cavs have been said to really, really want coming up to playoff time. What team wouldn't want Kyle Korver to come off the bench? Thabo is one of the best on-ball, man-to-man defenders in the entire NBA. Even if you're a team like, I don't know, the Warriors, not many guys defend LeBron better than Thabo Sefolosha. Just to have Thabo there, that at one point in the game you could put him in, even if it's for 10, 15 minutes, and frustrate LeBron. There's a lot of different pieces here that they could get something back for. And even if they don't get massive hauls individually, nice pieces across two or three trades, all of a sudden you have something maybe you can bundle and do something a little bit more imaginative, a little bit more progressive when it comes to what is generally being built up to be a loaded draft class.
So you think they're going to try to reach for the stars and grab a star, so to speak, in the 2017 NBA draft?
I don't know if they're going to do that. I think if they're getting to a place where they feel, okay, it's not in our best interest to bring Millsap back, he's going to opt out, there's no point us being the team who pays him the big money, let's move him on, they are at least open to thinking of the next step forward. And to be perfectly honest, I feel that's got to be someone and something completely different. I don't think the Hawks can get a player back in a deal for Millsap. And if you're to combine the three guys, I'm not sure if they can get a player back that really does anything more than make them what the Hawks have been for quite a long time. And I think Schroeder is developing. He's developing better than I expected, to be honest, this year. He's looking really, really good. That could be your franchise point guard. The thought of, well, if you could find a way where you end up moving up in a loaded draft, you find another superstar, all of a sudden you've got two young superstars and Schroeder, your draft pick, and then a proven veteran, multiple-time All-Star, and a hometown guy, which is kind of important too, and Dwight Howard, you've got an interesting core to be competitive, but also kind of stealthily rebuild with over the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to watch what they do. The one thing with Schroeder is, from everything I've heard, and I haven't watched much of this draft class yet, it's a point guard heavy draft. So it'll be interesting to see if the Hawks end up getting a high pick in this draft and the best player available is a point guard, what they do in that situation. I think they like Schroeder. Schroeder's been good from everything that I've seen. So I feel like that'll probably be, from Atlanta's point of view, just like a bridge you cross when you get there. I don't think that the Hawks are too worried about that exact scenario right now, just because add the talent now and then figure it out later. Let's talk about trades. I know you think the most likely outcome is the Toronto Raptors dealing for Paul Millsap. Obviously, they're the team that you look around and say, what contending team needs a power forward right now? You have, you know, the Clippers are starting Blake Griffin, who's very good. You know, you look around at other teams, they have at least some sort of option there, a good stretchy guy. You look at the Raptors, they're starting Pascal Siakam, a second-round pick in this last draft. Clearly not ideal, clearly not the kind of guy you want lining up against Kevin Love and LeBron James in the Eastern Conference Finals, which is likely where they'll end up. So Toronto acquiring Millsap makes a lot of sense. Just to know before we go into any talk about trades, the Raptors have no picks outgoing, and they have that Clippers pick that used to be Milwaukee's coming in 2017, protected for the lottery. The Clippers are in the seventh seed right now, but that's without Blake Griffin and Chris Paul. I doubt they'll end up in the lottery. Who knows? So what's your suggested trade? I think you tweeted it and it became a rumor, but it's not a rumor.
Yeah,
It's an idea. What's your idea?
All of this, not even just what I say. Oh, what Ty says also, this is opinion, right? This is not like Woj and Mark Stein sitting down to discuss things that they're actually hearing. This is rumor.
I don't think anyone believes that mine are real after some of the things I tweeted last night.
You'd be surprised. I didn't think anyone would believe me, and here we are. First of all, that Clippers pick seems to follow me around. I don't know. I think it's trying to haunt me, and that any basketball team I pay attention to, that Clippers pick is going to linger. I just think there aren't a whole lot of deals. In scenarios like this, it's hard to find potential trades that just make perfect sense for both teams. I think the Raptors one is the deal. It doesn't just make sense for both teams. It's doing the best by Millsap too, which I feel the Hawks would like to do if possible. They generally have been good at that when trading guys, and Millsap has done a lot for the Hawks since he signed. Okay, they've done a lot for him. They've helped transform his career in the time he's been there, but he's done a lot for them. I think the Raptors insanely are on track to be the second best offense of all time behind this year's Warriors.
Did they fall from number one now?
The Warriors are ahead of them.
Oh, okay. For a while, it was Raptors 1 and Warriors 2.
Well, still, to be in that mix, considering everything that was spoken about this summer,
yeah.
For the Raptors to be there, like a Dwayne Casey coach team that loves to shoot long twos.
That starts Pascal Siakam.
But even not that, right? Okay, so we're talking about Millsap and potential fit in Toronto. Just think of how much the Raptors have got out of Patrick Patterson the last couple of years. And he really is kind of a poor man's Paul Millsap. It's like, if you can do the things they've done with Patrick Patterson, you're going to be something really special with Paul Millsap slotting into that role. I feel their roster is a very good fit for him. I would also say he becomes the best player on their team if they get him. That's my honest opinion on that. And that's not being disparaging for Larry or DeRozan, because they're pretty close to him. I think it brings the Raptors to a point where maybe they don't have a top 10 guy, but they have three top 20, top 25 guys in the league, which is pretty good going if you can get three guys in that sort of bracket of talent.
I mean, yeah,
for me, they have the young guys, though, right, that they could move, that the Hawks might be interested in, that salaries can match up with. As you mentioned, picks aren't a problem for them to give away. And I think they're reaching a point where they're probably prepared to roll the dice on that.
So you,
for me, it's the most logical one.
You thought it would be one pick, Patrick Patterson and Terrence Ross?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It adds, the salaries add up. The Hawks get Terrence Ross, who is going to regress from some of the insane shooting and stuff he's had this year, but he's a good young wing, still room to improve, and the Hawks are desperately in need of not just wings, but young wings. He could actually help keep them semi-competitive this year. Likewise, if you're trading Millsap, if Patrick Patterson comes back, again, you could kind of be okay, and he's a free agent this summer, so you don't have to worry about that. And then the first-round pick is important in this. I mean, the Hawks are going to have their own pick, but if they're shopping these three guys, unless they get some silly offer with players that another team really shouldn't be trading, I think they're looking for first-round picks. Maybe they consider multiple second-round picks and just having like a Celtics-esque war chest of picks coming into this draft that they could look to bundle and move up, but as we've seen in the past, that doesn't always come to fruition. It's easy to say, we've got all these assets, all these picks, what can we turn them into? And then on draft night, no one helps you out, no one bites, and you end up with kind of hoping one of four or five average guys turns out to be something much better.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing is that Norm Powell gets less than 15 minutes a game in Toronto. This is a real thing I heard Zach Lowe say. A lot of teams are sniffing around Norman Powell. I would not be surprised to see Atlanta try to get him. He's shooting 49% from the field and 40% from three. He's scoring 6 points per game. It's like I said, he plays 14.7. If they could get Norman Powell and then some other guys to match salary, Pat would be good.
See, I love Norman Powell. I feel he's if you're giving me one wing for Toronto, he's the guy I want. But it's going to take Terrence Ross to make the salaries work, and the Raptors are going to hurt themselves too much in
Well,
terms of wing depth.
what if
Unless,
Atlanta threw in one of those other guys?
yeah, unless, but then I don't know. Are you like, there's at least some offensive punch in Terrence Ross and Norman Powell. There's the potential for that. I'm not sure how much of that there really is in, definitely isn't in Thabo. In Korver, maybe, and particularly if he's on the floor with Lowry, DeRozan, Millsap, Valanciunas, he might get some open looks. But yeah, maybe. I think that's the only problem with that is I don't think the Raptors would be too clever to go all out and sort their power forward spot and then give themselves no depth. Like, think about that. If DeRozan got an injury and missed 2 weeks, even
Yeah.
things would get bad in a hurry without Norman Powell or Terrence Ross.
Yeah, it would not be good there. And yeah, the salaries don't work for Patterson and Powell. You need to add a lot more money. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do. I would feel like the Raptor or the Hawks would love to get Powell, but it does make it trickier to work out the deal. Is there a chance that Damari Carroll gets sent back to Atlanta? That's a
No, no
big
chance.
salary piece, but I don't think they want that contract, do they?
I mean, they're not in a place where Damari Carroll is worth their while anymore.
Right. Well, especially, I
I
mean,
mean,
that deal
they're
doesn't look great
bad.
on him. Yeah.
Well, I'll
Well,
say
they're
it.
not
If they
bad.
took Damari Carroll back and all of their salary cap is tied up in Kent Bazemore and Damari Carroll for the next 4 years, they'll have no problem getting high draft picks.
That's true. I mean, it's funny though that they're bad. They're not as good as they want to be, but they're still what, 18 and 16?
Yeah, but I think that's coming after a good spell. And what's really alarming is they started the season great. I mean, this is a team that 2.5 weeks in was on a roll, unlike most other teams. Everything looked to be working better than expected with Dwight. And ultimately, I guess the downfall has been, it hasn't been like Dwight has been really good for the Hawks. He missed some games with injury, but he's been really good, and that hasn't been an issue. He's fit kind of as well as you could hope. Millsap is as good as ever right now. Schroeder is playing better than ever. At the start of the season, though, you had Thabo shooting like 65% from 3-point range for a couple of weeks, and you had Malcolm Delaney come in, and he was shooting lights out from three. Tim Hardaway is having a good season still, but he was doing even better in that brief spell. Korver is still going good overall, but once again, like the problem has been the shooting has disappeared, and to start the year, it was lights out. And that's really the difference. I mean, you can't have a Schroeder, Howard driven team that doesn't have shooting.
Yeah, I think so. Basically, you're looking at it like it's kind of like this whole operation's held together by Millsap, a Band-Aid here or there, a piece of gum holding back a levee from bursting. Like it's sort of running on fumes right now.
It's a little bit like that. I just think Horford's gone, Teague's gone, Korver's a free agent this summer, and although I'm surprised even to hear Korver's name circulate, like if Korver does stay, I'd expect him to re-sign in the Hawks on a super cheap deal. I just feel he's so like entrenched in the organization that wouldn't surprise me if he was kind of there till the end at this point. But so much of that core group, like this rumor's coming out, this is like exactly 2 years from the entire starting five being player of the
Player of the
month,
month, yeah, in January.
and you've only got Millsap left starting and Korver the other one, and both of them now are in trade rumors, and it feels like it's a natural progression. If Millsap had 2 years in his deal, I don't think it matters. I mean, right now you don't have to do it, you'd listen still. But okay, the team's doing all right now. Maybe it clicks again like it did at the start of the season and you become something better than expected. But with him expiring, going to opt out, and from there, I mean, he deserves a big deal. The Hawks aren't the team right now who should pay it to him.
Yeah. Let's buzz through some other teams. We'll switch off because I know you have a couple other you think are real likely. I have one that I just kind of thought up when I was looking through something else. What if the Detroit Pistons call? This is a team who has a lot of forwards. They're not really power forwards or small forwards, but they don't have any that are nearly as good as Millsap. And I don't know if they could, I don't think they could re-sign him. I think that would probably kill the deal because they're not good enough to justify spending talent on a rental if they can't get him back. And I do think if unless bird rights change, I think whatever team trades for Millsap would have the inside track on re-signing him because they could pay him more. But again, I don't know if Detroit would even have the money, or I don't know if that deal would work. It probably wouldn't.
I think most of the teams that are going to want to trade for Millsap, bird rights won't necessarily be the most appealing thing to them because they'll be the team's hardest push to be able to afford him. Yeah, so the idea of paying him more is okay. They'll be able to get around it with bird rights, but it's not necessarily the best thing from an owner's perspective.
No.
Like I feel there's maybe one team in the mix who are a really viable candidate who a deal supposedly nearly happened at. Just as the whole Howard signing, Horford leaving went down, is the Nuggets.
Yeah.
And that's because the Nuggets have the space where in the summer they desperately want like a proven experienced star. And you understand that they've got so many great young players. It's kind of like why they wanted D-Wade last year, except if you can get Millsap, that's probably a lot better for you for a couple of years. You're a better team and you still have a kind of proven, successful veteran, that all-star type of guy. I feel they're a real contender. Detroit, I don't know. I honestly, I don't think Detroit are good enough right now.
Yeah, I don't think they would take that. Well, I mean, I don't know. Would SVG take a shot like that? Like, it depends how much they'd have to give up, I guess, right? Like, if you could give, I don't know.
But how do they re-sign him? Like, if they want to,
I don't know.
If they want to bring back Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, say, how do they re-sign Millsap? And I don't even know what they give the Hawks, if not KCP, which I don't know how into that the Hawks would be either.
I'm guessing,
even though he's a local guy.
I'm guessing Tobias Harris is involved to Matt Sarris. He's young.
No thanks.
Who are the Nuggets giving up? You think Gallo?
Well, it takes Gallo or Wilson Chandler to sort of get close on salaries.
Or Kenneth Faried.
Yeah, I get that, and the Hawks would need someone to play power forward with Millsap gone. But remember, Bud is not just a coach, he's president of basketball operations, and Bud's style doesn't exactly lend to a Kenneth Faried, Dwight Howard front court.
Yeah, that's true. Are you trying to get one of these younger guards here?
I saw somewhere today, once again, not a report, but just someone thrown out there, like if the Hawks could get a Gary Harris,
yeah,
that I think he's a great fit for what Budenholzer likes on both ends, room to develop, and then while everything else you're going to do in terms of rebuilding is going on, you at least can sort of be saying, okay, we've got Schroeder and Gary Harris as a really good defensive backcourt, like really, really good.
Do you go for Nurkic?
There's no point. With Dwight, there's no point.
Yeah. He's good, though.
I'd take Gary Harris, like Gallo. You probably need, like, a Wancho Hernan Gomez or something in there, one more guy to make salaries match. And then, I mean, if you could get a pick, and Denver have a lot of picks, well, you know what? That's well and good. That makes it all the better.
Gallo and Gary Harris from Millsap works.
Okay. I do that. That would a pick, I think, makes sense for both teams, really.
Yeah, they have three incoming seconds that all look real, and they also have Memphis's first this year, unless Memphis ends up as one of the worst five teams in the NBA.
Which isn't happening. So, I mean, I think it's probably a little on the short side for the Hawks. Maybe not, but Gallo, Gary Harris, and the Memphis pick. That'd be cool with me.
I don't know. It's interesting to me to see who would sort of fight harder for Millsap, Toronto or Denver. And I think the best thing Atlanta could do is try to make some sort of bidding war happen. Like, the best scenario for the Hawks is if their phone rings off the hook.
I mean, that could happen. If it lasts, if they want that kind of scenario, maybe the first rumblings of it coming out now is a little early, although I'm sure this was relatively common knowledge among NBA front offices. It's maybe a little early. You want that to be a little bit closer to trade deadline, where teams panic a tiny bit more, and you know, you can just get caught up in the fever of it all. And it's possible. I mean, there are other good teams too. Like, I don't think they necessarily need to make the trade, but the Rockets with Millsap is...
I was looking at that one too. I think that'd be a lot of fun there. I don't know what they'd give back.
Right? It's not. It's not going to be... Yeah, see, the Hawks aren't going to want that.
No, not for $80 million.
The Hawks would have to take back one bad contract. I mean, you could sweeten that with, say, like Montrezl Harrell would be a nice young piece to get back, particularly seeing as they're going to be short on power forward depth now.
I think they need him right now, don't they?
Right now.
But
if they get Millsap, I'm talking about, that could be the sort of thing the Hawks would look for. I don't know. It's a trickier one to make a deal that makes sense for the Hawks, but
yeah,
they're a team that are so progressive. I wouldn't be surprised if they look to get a third team involved and figure something out, just because, like with everything Harden is doing right now, teaming him with Millsap under a Mike D'Antoni offense could just be complete force of nature stuff.
Well, whenever you hear something like this, you always think toward the teams that make the most moves, right? So, like, the Rockets are always up there. The Celtics, although I feel it'd be really weird if Boston went out of their way to repair Millsap and Horford. I mean, I think there's sort of a ceiling set on that, how far that can go, especially when you got Jay Crowder there already. I guess he might be in the deal. I don't know. I think that'd be weird.
That would be – Jay Crowder is Damari Carroll, so you're basically recreating the 60-win Hawks. You want to call Isaiah Thomas Jeff Teague. He's probably better in some ways.
Yeah, and then Avery Bradley's
in some ways too.
A younger and then, Korver.
Yeah, I mean, what is that team really doing? I mean, Brad Stevens' bud as coach is pretty even to me. I don't know. It's an improvement. Definitely, it makes the Celtics better. I mean,
yeah, but it makes them better for a couple be better, months.
What's their ceiling? Are you putting a cap on how much better?
Yeah, I just don't. I don't see it. I don't want to say jokingly, but I just tossed a couple out there that I thought would be interesting with Cleveland and the Clippers and the Wizards. I don't think any of those really even come close to happening.
I've seen other people toss them out since. I still think, like, the idea of the Cavs giving Love for Mills up, I think that's ridiculous.
I don't think the Cavs would ever do it, but imagine how much fun it would be. This is the only reason I said it. I would love to watch LeBron and Paul Millsap on the same team. Like, that'd be beautiful.
But what do you get out of that? I mean, really, because...
You get to watch that happen. You get to, oh my God, this is great.
I know, but I don't really see where you're getting the upgrade from Love to Millsap, because...
No, I mean, if they were still, quote-unquote, displeased with him before the finals and before he started playing like Minnesota Love this year, maybe. Probably not, but maybe. But as it stands now, there's no way. They're not trading anyone significant. They would. I could see them sniffing after Tabo.
The touches there, though, right?
I could see that. Yeah, he wouldn't.
It's not the same Millsap, so I don't feel they get the full benefit out of that kind of deal.
I could see Portland and Utah sniffing around it.
Utah makes sense. I mean, Millsap back to the Jazz. They are uncertain about what they're going to do, and they're trying to figure out what guys they'll pay. They might kind of say, you know what, Millsap could be a guy who long-term, I mean, Quinn Snyder's the coach who obviously Millsap has played under, really strong relationship between the Hawks and the Jazz. That kind of makes sense for me. That would be an outside one that wouldn't completely shock me, because they might take the risk as in they're a team who is pretty good already and they're looking for that thing. Like, there's constant talk, like the piece Zach Lowe wrote not too long ago about, like, what is it that gets the Jazz over the hump to the next level? And what if it's Paul Millsap? Paul Millsap in his prime now. What if that makes them a team who can get a couple of upsets and go deeper in the West than people expect this year? That's an interesting question. And then if they have uncertainties over what they want to do in the summer, maybe there's appeal to them to him being a free agent in the summer. They can decide, you know what, we want him long term and bring him back. Or they can decide, you know what, Gordon Hayward is more important to us, thinking about Rodney Hood long term. We'll use the cap space and we'll see what else we can do. Maybe make some sort of adjustment, because I love Derek Favors and I love Rudy Gobert, but Favors' shot hasn't come on just enough yet to make him the Millsap compliment. You know,
would it be a Favors from Millsap swap?
Yeah, I'm inclined to think so, which in a way isn't ideal for the Hawks, but it's a very, very good deal on the other hand that might be hard to turn down.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a big question mark there, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Jazz just sort of gave it some thought. I mean, Millsap was clearly happy there. He played well there in the past. The homecoming story would kind of be nice.
Yeah, it would be. We should get going. Two more things. Well, one thing I want to ask you. So you do not think this anything about Millsap deals get done until like the trade deadline?
I'd be surprised. I mean, things don't generally move that fast when something breaks. I think the Hawks are obviously open to offers, unless they get some sort of crazy offer where it's they're going to do the deal now before anything else happens. You're going to have teams trying to bargain with them as such. So I don't think you'll get a crazy offer that they're going to snap the hand off anyone at just yet. They'll bide their time, and then as it gets closer to the trade deadline, if he's still there, they might say, you know what, we need to do this now. We need to get something. The team is not where it's going to be if we're going to kick on.
Yeah.
Or whatever way they're looking at it right now.
The last thing is, in addition to being able to pay more, the bird rights are important because that means you can go over the cap to sign them. Like, if that stays how it is. Like, I haven't seen a complete version of the new CBA yet. I don't know if bird rights have changed at all. I think it is.
It's easy to say that, but with that, as I said, from an owner's point of view, your salary bill is going up.
Well, and the other thing is that they switch cap holds. I remember reading about this. Like, last year, the Wizards waited to sign Bradley Beal until last because they knew they could go over the cap for him. It doesn't work as easily as that anymore. You can't just wait to re-sign a guy with bird rights. Like, they count for more under the cap, so it's harder to do other stuff. So it's not like you can, you know, be pretty much full and then do stuff and then re-sign a guy. It's not that easy. But, I mean, these teams always find ways to make these things work. I think that's it for now, unless you had any other last notes. I think we both agree. I mean, I threw out a lot of crazy stuff, but I think the most likely are Toronto and Denver. Maybe Utah. I don't know if Utah wants to have to worry about paying him and Hayward, I think, after this year. But maybe, it would be a fun run for them, and that's kind of what they need after being so tantalizingly close to being a good team and then missing the playoffs. Like, they do need to get into the postseason before some of these guys come off their deals. So maybe they do it.
Maybe. We'll see. I think Toronto have the best reason to do it. They could actually become a championship contender with it. That could get them past the Cavs, and all of a sudden you're in the finals. You've at least got a team who, you know, could really scare them. So that's the most worthwhile reason. The Nuggets have a worthwhile reason in their own right, just because they have a ton of assets. They've really too many young guys, and they're kind of playing well again now, and maybe they just want to say, you know what, let's kickstart this. Let's move it up a gear and have the right kind of guy in place that our youngsters can learn from. So both have good reasons. I would say it might be easier for the Nuggets to overpay, but it might be more worthwhile for the Raptors.
I think that's solid. Also, look out for dumb teams like Orlando to try to way overpay for Millsap for no reason. I'm not counting out Orlando from doing anything stupid ever until they get new front office people / maybe ownership. Okay. Adam McGee, let me hear your plugs. You got a new podcast that I'm a big fan of. I think you have other plugs too, but let me hear all your plugs.
Yeah, I've got a new podcast. Time Out with Ty listeners should notice already, unless they're skipping episodes. Andrew Snyder was on a couple of weeks ago now, was it? Maybe more recently even. But Andrew and I have a movie and TV podcast called The Leftover Popcorn Podcast. You could find us on iTunes and Stitcher, SoundCloud. You could follow us on Twitter at Leftover Pop Pod. We basically do weekly podcast, dipping into the world of film and TV, new releases, older movies or TV shows, general debates. There's a little bit of everything in there. Otherwise, as usual, you'll find me at Behind the Book Pass. Lots of good stuff there, including our Win in Six podcast, where I constantly make fun of Ty because he's too busy to come on. If you enjoy listening to Ty, but you'd rather listen to people make fun of Ty, Win in Six podcast is the place to go. Otherwise, you find me at Hoops Habit, at thestepbackandfansided.com, and at Pro Golf Now, writing about golf as well.
Great. Yeah, I already did my plug. I didn't think about this. I did my plugs on the first segment with Shane Young, but I'll do them real quick again. Follow me on Twitter at Ty Windish, timeoutwithty.com, behindthebugpass.com, hoopshabit.com. You can subscribe on SoundCloud, Stitcher, or iTunes, the best three options. And I think it's also on podcast.com. I don't know how it got there, but it did. Shout out Joey Burbs. New music coming within a week, he says, so check for that in 2018. At Joey
2017,
Burbs.
Ty.
No, I know. I'm making fun of him. I'm saying it'll take a year.
How dare you? I'm going to get on Twitter with Joey now and make fun of you.
Sounds good. But Adam, thanks for coming on and not making fun of me too much until the very end. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Ty.